Well, it's that time again. It's time for another Persiflage podcast. For those of you coming late to the game, these podcasts are an audio record of the old magazine Persiflage, which was published in the early part of this millennium. And what I'm doing is I'm reading them aloud, one per week. And this week is the 13th week. So this would be Persiflage number 13. But I see that they have cleverly written on this one, why it's the luckiest Persiflage ever. If this was an apartment building, it would be issue number 14. I think that's a gag based on the fact that most apartment buildings don't have a 13th floor. They go from 12 to 14. So this is the 13th Persiflage, and it was printed on June 14th, 2001. So without further ado, as we like to say, I will read the first article, which is called The Sad Unfortunate Tale of Elrose Watermolder, and it appears to have been written by Elrose P. Watermolder himself. So here goes. There once was a correspondent for a very cheap magazine who was sent on the impossible task of documenting American culture on a budget that it would have left a frugal third-world family gaunt. Sadly, he was given no moral support in this endeavor either. He was left with only his native wit to support him. Thankfully, this was not lacking. He began his journey in Fargo, where so many quests, spiritual and otherwise, have begun, and worked his way more or less south. His stay in Cedar Falls, Iowa, was prolonged beyond the time that common sense would dictate spending in that odious burg by a misunderstanding with local law enforcement officials, brought on by an imperfect knowledge of local gaming laws and the generally accepted mores of snipe hunting. After his release, aided by a crowd of over-enthusiastic members of the Chamber of Commerce, he made his way quickly out of town. He found himself next in the great state of Kentucky, Louisville to be exact, that great bus hub of Middle America. There, due to a sad lack of funds, he was forced to hang out in the bus depot, dodging the burly and well-armed security guards who conducted their rounds too often to allow napping. It was in the depot that he met a kindly older gentleman in a black wool suit who offered to share a bottle of Ezra Brooks that he had back in his room. As the correspondent was extremely thirsty and had already finished the stash of tiny airline scotches he had in his travel bag, he accompanied the aforementioned old man back to his place of residence. It was, in fact, a bearish room, such as employees of certain cheapskate publications are accustomed to rest their weary bones in. Some might refer to it as a flophouse. That would be unkind. Accurate, but unkind. The old man did have a nice bottle of Ezra Brooks, which was delicious, even when drunk out of stained bathroom tumblers. But it had become obvious, even before the bottle was half empty, sadly, that in his dotage, the old man had confused his state mottos and was suffering under the misapprehension that Kentucky was the show-me state. Our hero beat a hasty retreat and found himself once more penniless on the street. Thankfully, he was no longer strictly sober. The end. I added the end. It's not actually printed there, but it is the end. Next up is a poem entitled God's Gift to Women. If you are that, as you suppose yourself to be, then he, or she, as the case may be, is either strapped for cash, as I once was, or is the original misogynist. I hate gag gifts. Sally Kind. Next up is... there's no title on this piece, but it appears to be a translation of something. Let me read this short introductory paragraph here, which is in italics. We here at Persiflage are excited to present in this issue a very rare thing indeed. It is a short prose piece by the late Charles Rochebeauvoir. Known primarily as a love poet, Rochebeauvoir's prose work is almost entirely unknown. The following selection was found folded and stuffed under a wobbly table leg in a small cafe in Paris that the poet was known to frequent. It was translated from the French by yours truly, and it's signed Hubris. So Hubris, I guess, did the translation. All right. Well, let's give this a whack, as the kids say. Here goes. I am an enigma to myself. My most obvious movements are unknown to me. My motivations are glimpsed out of an eye's corner, through a delicate screen of webs woven by enormous foreign spiders in a dimly lit room on an early fall evening. I ponder them, but am availless in this, my most urgent quest. I am a seeker after my own truth, which must be the truth of the world, a world gone mad. Ah, the women, have they known me? They have seemed to. Their delicate hands wielding the cutting utensils that have not quite cut through the opaquening web of manufactured deception. My night cries have revealed all to them, or so it seems. But what of Mama? They are imitators, shades of her surely, but with thinner legs and things not fit for the eyes of Greek kings. Their softnesses unravel me, and I am left alone with my confusion. It follows me from my bed and into the kitchen while I make a sandwich. A dog barks somewhere at midnight. I'm out of mayonnaise again. Charles Rochebeauvoir. Well, that was certainly odd. Okay. So, quite the mixed bag this week. A little travelogue, a little poem, some prose poetry, I guess we would call this. And next up is a piece called Missive to a Friend Considering Surgery. And this appears to have been penned by Mr. Briss as well. Here goes. I certainly would advise against the whole idea of performing your own lobotomy. Sure, it sounds simple, and the savings, of course, are tremendous. After all, how much is a knitting needle? But there are problems that may not be readily apparent. Well, first off, there's the health risk. What, you say? What could be more safe than jabbing a needle in your eye socket and wiggling it about? Well, for one thing, what about infection? Oh, never thought of that, did you? Knitting needles are not generally noted for their sterilized quality. Sterilizing, maybe. Yanking Auntie's needles out of that old sweater she's been working on for the last 10 years is just not wise. Didn't I see the cat playing with that ball of wool earlier? I don't know about you, but I'm not all that keen on inserting cat spittle into any of my orifices. Secondly, there's the question of effectiveness. You're not a doctor, and judging by that game of darts the other night, your aim's not all that great either. Oh, sure, we'd all been drinking, but who's to say you wouldn't have a few before the operation? I know I would. Thirdly, or perhaps secondly and a half, as it's connected to reason number two, there are the side effects of a botched job. The human brain is a marvelously complex and enigmatic organ. Even neurologists don't fully understand its many wonders, although what they've been doing all this time I don't know. What chance has someone like you, or I, mostly you, of pulling this off without deleterious effects? Do you really want to spend the rest of your life yodeling a walk in the Black Forest every time you smell chicken? I seem to recall your being rather rude about all those people at the Ravine concert. And remember, that was for only one night. Let's face it, a lobotomy is not the answer to all your problems. A good portion of them, maybe, but not all. Besides, it would ruin your enjoyment of the witty banter on Entertainment Tonight. Hubris. I'm not sure that Entertainment Tonight is still on the television. I'll have to check that out tonight. Okay, and the end of this week's persiflage is, as per usual, the usual run of quotations. And there's three. First one. When an author disappoints you as a person, you've overestimated his work. Anton Ku. The influence of reading matter on the individual depends on both of them, but unfortunately, the writer has a pencil. Alfred Polgar. Every author is a son of a bitch. Horace Livewright. Or perhaps that's Livewright. Isn't there a publisher, Livewright? Wonder if that's a coincidence. Anyway, that's it for this week. So, once again, I bid you a fond adieu, and so forth. Goodbye.